short story master Alice Munro would be justified in resting on her laurels at this point in her career. She's won Canada's Governor General's Literary Award 3 times and the National Book Critics Circle Award. But in her new collection of short stories, called The View from Castle Rock, Munro veers off into a fresh direction, exploring family history through fact and fiction. Book critic Maureen Corrigan has a review.
I'm sure Alice Munro, as usual, was just trying to weigh her words carefully at the outset of her new short story collection, The View from Castle Rock. But her preface does read a bit like a warning label designed to enlighten by now suspicious literary consumers as to the ratio of fact to fiction contained within the 12 stories that follow. Munro says that the stories in the first half of her book were inspired by old letters and journals concerning her family history in Scotland and Canada. These stories, Munro claims, are as truthful as our notion of the past can ever be. The more contemporary first-person stories in the second half of the book are not memoirs exactly, although she says they pay more attention to the truth of a life than fiction usually does, but not enough to swear on. I'm still confused about what generic label to affix to these stories, but I'm not at all confused about what to call them. Haunting, wise, spare, deeply sad, just plain magnificent. To the extent that many of Munro's stories here are autobiographical, she reminds jaded readers that oftentimes the most daring secrets an autobiographical piece of writing can reveal are not the over-the-top confessions about sex, drugs, and recovery, but rather those small but devastating betrayals of thought and affection known only to the person who harbors them. For instance, towards the end of the collection, there's a story called The Ticket, in which Munro recalls herself as a clever, restless young woman. This Munro is eager to exit the life of manual labor that her family, who supported themselves by fox farming and factory work, had trimmed themselves to. Munro's fiancé in the story is a young man from more comfortable circumstances. She has this epiphany to offer about her family's teasing. I knew what they thought about Michael. They thought he was too brightly smiling, too nicely shaved and shiny-shoed, too well brought up and heartily polite. They had a habit of poor people, perhaps especially of poor people burdened with more intelligence than their status gets them credit for, a habit or necessity of turning their betters, or those whom they suspect of thinking themselves their betters, into such caricatures. Those hesitations you hear in Munro's sentences, that relentless casting about for just the right word, would be annoying if she were a lesser writer who never quite nailed it. But she does, time and again. In a compact phrase that speaks volumes, Munro, through her fictional alter ego, dubs her father a man of kind evasions. And that's in a story called Home, in which she's describing his final illness. Munro doesn't shy away from issuing equally chilly judgments about herself, or to be more precise, about the first-person narrators who stand in for herself in these stories. In the same story, Home, her narrator says she narrowly missed becoming one of those rural misfits, captives, nearly useless, celibate, rusting. She adds, "I can see myself as a middle-aged daughter who did her duty, stayed at home, thinking that someday her chance would come, until she woke up and knew it wouldn't." This is stern stuff. But in light of the family history that Munro partly pieces together and partly invents in the first half of this collection, you can see that strain of flint running through her Scottish ancestors. These were people who farmed in the Ettrick Valley of Scotland, a land described in an 18th century source Munro quotes as having no advantages. Munro brings that ancestral world, or a drizzly gray facsimile of it, to life. It's a place where Presbyterian elders roam the landscape on the lookout for fornicators, and those with the strength to move pack up their damp bedding, lock the farmhouse door, and book passage on boats to North America. As Munro makes clear, She's descended from people who are always suspicious of words because they didn't have much use for them in the course of a workday. When I was growing up, her narrator says in the penultimate story called What Do You Want to Know For?, an appetite for impractical knowledge of any kind did not get encouragement. It was necessary to learn to read, but not in the least desirable to end up with your nose in a book. Fortunately, Monroe is a genetic maverick whose taciturn inheritance shows in her choice of the short story as her signature form and in the scrupulously chosen words that make those stories breathe.
Maureen Corrigan teaches literature at Georgetown University. She reviewed The View from Castle Rock, a new short story collection by Alice Monroe.